Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Celtic Soul podcast with me, Andrew Millen. And as always, you're very welcome to the show. My guest on episode 11 will be former professional footballer and Celtic fan, Jim McCallion. This episode has been kindly sponsored by the Brian Hogan Celtic Supporters Club down in Tipperary. I'd like to thank all the members for the continued support of the fanzine and our independent Celtic fan media platforms. As the Celtic fans go, Adidas Looney. Without doubt, it's nice gear, but at the moment I'm more interested in the Fraser Foster saga, if I'm honest. For whatever reason, we just can't seem to get the deal over the line, but I do expect some more twists and turns before a ball is kicked or saved on August the 4th. I'm hearing he's getting paid £90,000 a week to sit in the stands down in Southampton. He's going to have to take a majority pay cut if he comes and joins Celtic on a permanent deal. First team football and another shot up Europe are the rewards. We could extend his loan deal and that would maximise his earnings. I would imagine his wages would be paid in part by Celtic and a big part by Southampton. As third choice keeper at the moment down with the EPL side, getting these wages, I'm sure his current employers would like to get him off the wage bill. Celtic have a pay scale, and even with us going for the 10 in a row, a very important season looming, I don't think we're going to match anywhere near the money he may be looking for. I'm sure there's a plan B or a plan C, but don't forget Scott Bain, a decent goalkeeper. I can't remember him ever letting us down, and Brendan Rodgers always had faith in him. We don't have a goalkeeping crisis, but it ain't good. Craig Gordon's left. We need to prioritise the goalkeeping spot, with Scott Bain the only one left from those first three experienced keepers from last season. On a positive note, Mo Elanusi has signed, and if him and Mikey Johnson stay fit, there'll be a quality battle for that position in the starting lineup. And it also gives Neil Lennon options to think about how he sets his team out for different games. If he's going to go one up top or two up top with Griff and Eddie, which worked out so well after the winter break. I'm so lucky to get the chance to chat to all these guests on the podcast, and today was no different. Here's how I get on when I chat to Jim.
My guest on episode 10 is Jim McCallion, Glasgow-born Celtic fan. Jim McCallion never donned the hoops, but what a career he had down in England. Leeds, Chelsea, Sheffield Wednesday, Wolves, Manchester United and Southampton, and will forever be remembered for scoring the winner for Scotland in the 3-2 win over World Cup winners England back in 1967, a year that all Celtic fans remember. Jim, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast. How has life been in lockdown?
Life has been good, Andrew. We've made the best of it, me and Debbie, and we've enjoyed it. We've had a lot of work to do outside the house, so obviously hoping that we could open up again for the B&B. So we've been kept very busy. And, of course, the weather's been good because I like doing a bit of sunbathing.
Oh, yeah. That's the old vein coming back out.
Yeah, I think I always used to do when I was playing, Andrew. End of the season, we'd maybe get 5 or 6 weeks holiday and I'd usually go for a week in Jersey and 3 weeks in Marbella. So I loved the sun. I kind of followed it for a bit. But that just recharged my batteries for getting back to starting pre-season training again.
Just point of talk about pre-season, before we kick on in, most players I speak to hated pre-season. John Hart and Paul Bowen, Scott McDonald, and this, you know, all played in different eras for Celtic, but they all hated it because they loved having a couple of points during the summer.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think we know when we go back for pre-season, it's going to be pretty tough, but what you do in the pre-season is what helps you throughout the season. And throughout my career, it helped me absolutely, Andrew, because, you know, at one spell at Wolves, I played 77 games on the trot. So that proved it, that, you know, a good pre-season is what you've got to aim for.
Now, I'm going to take you back a bit, Jim. You joined Leeds as a teenager after playing for the Glasgow Schools. Can you take the listeners back to your childhood and those teenage years in Glasgow? Who were you influenced? Were you influenced by Celtic players back then? And did Celtic ever come in for an offer because you were a youngster in demand?
Yes, Celtic came to sign me twice, Andrew, but unfortunately I'd already decided to go to Leeds and then I'd decided to go to Chelsea. But there was a guy called John Murphy who was our head gym teacher, and he used to read out the teams at Celtic Park, and he knew most of the people at Celtic Park. And when I first went to Holyrood from St. Francis Boys School, John Murphy called me in his office on my first day at Holyrood. I was 13, and he says, "Nice to meet you, James." And he says, "Celtic is going to be keeping tabs on you." But the thing was, I went back to the classroom, and because the message had come over the tannoy, all the lads, my schoolmates were saying, you know, "Are you in trouble?" And of course, I couldn't tell them what John Murphy had already said, because they think, "What a big-headed so-and-so he is." So I had to keep that to myself. But I've obviously followed Celtic when I was a boy. I used to sneak down to Celtic Park. My dad wasn't really that much bothered about football, but we used to sneak under the turnstiles or get over the turnstiles and look at some the great players that Celtic had in the 50s, Andrew. And there certainly was. And a lot of my heroes were, I was fortunate enough to see Charlie Tully. There was quite a lot of Irish guys. John Fallon, obviously, I've seen a wee bit of him. I've seen a bit of Neely Mochan, Bertie Auld. But probably my biggest hero at Celtic Park, because I like to play with the ball and I like to pass the ball, was Paddy Crerand. And Paddy was a big influence. And of course, he was from the same district as me, Andrew, which was the Gobbles. We were both born in the Gobbles. And funnily enough, we both went to Holyrood Senior Secondary.
Did Charlie Gallagher, Charlie was in the Gobbles as well, obviously Paddy's cousin. So there was some talent knocking about the Gobbles.
Yes, there certainly was. It was not only in the football side of it, there was a lot in the music scene as well, and also in the boxing scene. You know, I used to walk from the Gobbles to Celtic because I lived in Cali Road. So I just walked straight out Cali Road, keep on going past Shawfield, and that would take me to Parkhead.
Now, you obviously know what it's like to come through as a young player. Celtic have produced plenty of talent through the ranks over many decades, and the current team of James Forrest and Mikey Johnson, just to name two. But there's so much pressure on those players to win the 10 now. Do you think that this will stop the club maybe feeding young players through until the end of this season, because it's just such an important historical season?
Well, I think that's going to be up to, obviously, Neil, because Neil is seeing them at first hand, Andrew. With due respect to the fans, we see the team on a Saturday afternoon or a midweek game. Neil sees them throughout the week, and that's what Neil's job is, and he's, by the way, he's doing a great job. That's what Neil's got to look out for and see who he thinks is maybe going to give him an edge somewhere. And Mikey Johnson and James Forrest are obviously great players, although they're young lads. And they've handled the occasion before. And I think you've always got a good chance for young players. I tend to think I would put young kids in and give them a chance, even if there's pressure in there, because there's a lot of pressure trying to be a footballer. So they've come through all of that. So, no, I would be quite happy putting young players in.
And obviously, you made your debut at 18 at Chelsea when you moved from Leeds. You also became the most expensive teenager in Britain when you moved to Sheffield Wednesday. So you're in a good position to judge this. We took in a young player last year, well, a number of young players, but one shined, young Frimpong. He's done really well since he arrived at the club. He forced his way into the team, maybe before people thought he would, because I remember speaking to William McStay and it was kind of like, yeah, it'll take a while to get these in. But he was in the team quite young. Did he impress you?
Absolutely, because he was coming. The side that me and Debbie watched the matches is the other side from the tunnel. So, of course, we got a really good look at the young boy, and he's a great prospect. And, you know, it's great when you're, especially a defender, you're under pressure and you've got a wee guy like him that you can feed the ball to him, and he'll take it away down the wing and he'll take people on. And he's always looking to get forward. So, yeah, I think he's very impressive. I think it was a shame he got that injury. It was just one of them things that happens in football. I think it was against Kilmarnock he got the injury. And that kind of stopped him for a little while. But no, I think he's a great prospect. And I think Neil's got a great side there. And I was also quite impressed with the other right back, El Hamid. So, you know, there's going to be competition for places there, all depending on how Neil plays it, if he plays three at the back or whatever system that he's going to use. But I think his tactics have been very good, Neil.
Yeah, especially since they come back after the winter break. They really put the foot down. Now, at the moment, as a Celtic fan like me, you're spoilt, as the rest of us are. Trophy after trophy. Players are picking up medal after medal. But you were very unlucky in your career in finals. You lost out in an FA Cup final with Sheffield Wednesday, a UEFA Cup final with Wolves, before finally winning the FA Cup with Southampton, against Man United after Tommy Docherty had sold you, to them after winning promotion with United, who you suffered relegation with. So it's been a topsy-turvy career. The Southampton final must really stick out.
Yeah, that obviously is the big one, the FA Cup final. But the thing was, when I was at Chelsea, Andrew, we won the League Cup. But it was a different kind of tournament then. It was home and away, and not all the teams were actually in it. So I was fortunate enough to win it with Chelsea, although I didn't play in the final. And it was the same at Wolves. I'd played most of the games in the League Cup at Wolves. When Wolves won it back in the 70s. But I was disappointed because I'd had a fallout with the manager just in the February before the final of the League Cup. And, of course, I wasn't selected for the final. But Wolves won, so I was very happy for the boys. But I think the thing is, you know, we can't all win everything, Andrew. And like you say, we've been spoiled. We've watched Celtic winning so many games, and it just always, sometimes it's not to be, Andrew, you know, because there's been a lot of great teams that have not won finals. There's been a lot of great players that haven't even played in finals. So as far as I'm concerned about winning and losing, you know, it's better to have taken part in the final, Andrew. The one place I didn't like losing was a semi-final, because, of course, you don't get to the final.
Don't get to Wembley.
No, well, Wembley was always my big goal, Andrew, because as kids, we used to always go for the Glasgow Green. But when we were on our way back, we used to sneak into the Bowling Green and get the jackets down and play on the Bowling Green as though we were at Wembley. So Wembley was always a big motivation for myself.
And you graced it a few times.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, the game we played in the Charity Shield, I thought was marvellous. We played Liverpool after we'd won the Cup. And Liverpool won the league that year. And Liverpool only beat us 1-0. And it was a very warm day. I remember that. But that was great to play Liverpool, and we nearly beat Liverpool on that day as well. You know, we'd have sorted two very good teams out, Man United in the Cup and Liverpool in the Charity Shield.
Oh, brilliant. Was that Larry McMenemy was manager?
Yeah, that's Laurie. Laurie, I don't know how well up you are on your history, but I'm sure there's a lot of the guys listening, Celtic fans. Laurie McMenemy, there was a great guy called Jimmy McMenemy, used to play for Celtic years ago. So I don't know, Andrew. I'm not great on it, but I know that his family was associated with McMenemy family, with Celtic. So,
I didn't know that. We might have to ask Dave a part of that one.
Yeah, we need to go to the historians.
Jim, 10 in a row. You remember the first 9 in a row Celtic done. Yeah, we both have memories of Rangers equal, innit? Both teams were favourites to do the 10, but failed. Firstly, have you any memories of that 9 in a row campaign and then when they didn't reach the 10, the original Celtic 9 in a row?
Yeah, well, you know, back then they were going for the 9. The 10 wasn't such a big number because, of course, when Rangers got the 9, then it made it a bigger number now for Celtic to do it. But I think Celtic's up to it. I've every confidence that they'll do it this year. I think they didn't play as well as I know they can play in one of the Rangers games. But no, I think that Neil's got to take the pressure off them as much as he can. But I think if they just carry on with how they finish the season, I think there'll be too much for everybody else. And I'm absolutely convinced, not putting any pressure on the boys, that they will get 10 in a row.
You sound very confident, Jim.
Absolutely.
And do you think you spoke about Neil there? Do you think he can learn from maybe the mistakes made by Jock Stein? Because no one thought Celtic could be beaten that season. And if memory serves me right, and the history books serve me right, I think Celtic finished third behind Rangers and Hibs.
I'm not sure about that, Andrew, but Jock Stein casts a big shadow, doesn't he?
Yes, he sure does.
Jock certainly knew his stuff, and of course, Neil's played at a good level as well. And he's had quite a few years now in the management side. And everything that I think he's done up to now, he's done very well. And of course, he's maturing even more so than he was X amount of years ago. So, like I said, I'm absolutely convinced they will do 10 in a row.
Okay, I'm going to rewind a bit now, Jim, back to your playing career. All the goals you scored. You know, you spoke there about Cup Final and the Charity Shield. I know there's other highlights. I know you scored against Juventus in the run to the UEFA Cup Final, which was a two-legged affair then, I believe. And it was Tottenham that beat you in the final. And you also had that famous goal at international level against England. Can you tell us a little about some of the highlights of your career, some of the ups and downs, and maybe some of the players you played alongside or played against?
Yes, the highlight, obviously, of my career was the thing that I dreamed of and what I wanted to do, and that was to play for Scotland. And, of course, to play alongside the team that I was actually in, it was quite an amazing team. There were some great players in there. Dennis Lord, Jim Baxter, Billy Bremner. That's talking about the Anglos. And then, of course, you've got the Lisbon Lions. Little Bobby Lennox and Tommy Gemmell and Willie Wallace and Ronnie Simpson. I mean, they were in the team. It was a fabulous team and it was a fabulous day. And I think a lot of people talk about the game, but I think the important thing on that day was that Bobby Brown picked a team for that game. And I think the team just responded so well. But we should have perhaps scored a few more goals, Andrew. You know, Dennis certainly would have liked a few more because he'd been in the 9-3 game when Scotland had lost 9-3. So to beat the world champions on their own pitch after them being unbeaten for 19 games was obviously the greatest highlight of my football career. The biggest other things that I liked in my career, obviously, was the FA Cup final. Sadly, when I was 19, played for Sheffield Wednesday against Everton, who were the Bank of England club. for Everton, which was Everton then. John Moores, who had the pools, he was the owner of Everton as well. And of course, we were 2-0 up and we lost 3-2. Well, at 19 years of age, that was really pretty hard to take. But you have to take it, Andrew. You have to move on. You don't have to look back and, you know, in anger as it was. You have to look forward and take the experience out of it. And I remember the FA Cup final, going back up the tunnel and saying to myself, I need to come back to Wembley again. Even though we'd got beat, I wanted to get back. Fortunately enough, I was back the following year for Scotland. And then, of course, it was another 9 years until I got to the final again with Southampton. Southampton was, it was quite amazing. I think you could get 6-1 for us. Manchester United had a great year. Southampton, we were very much an up and down side. We weren't very consistent at all. But we had some great players. We had Mickey Shannon, who was the England number one pick as in the forward line. We also had Peter Osgood. Peter had been transferred for a real big lot of money. I think it was something like 275 grand, which back then was a lot of money. And he had been a great player for Chelsea. So, you know, getting to Wembley, United were flying. They absolutely had a great year. So it was all up to us to try and beat United. Well, after the first 20 minutes, I think we controlled the game very well, Andrew. And we run out easy winners in the end. I can't remember Man U doing a lot in the second half. But that was a great thing for myself to actually win an FA Cup winner's medal. And it says winners on it, even though Tommy Docherty says it was an offside goal.
What was your relationship like with Tommy? Because you hear so many stories about him.
Tommy Docherty was great for football. He was great for people at the club. But if you'd fallen out with Tommy, that was it. You were on the high road and that was it, you know. But I fell out with him quite a few times. I always had respect for Tommy Docherty. And it's also quite poignant, really, that we're talking about who, the guy who's maybe the oldest living Celtic player.
Wow, yeah. When you think of it, yeah.
Yeah, Tommy Docherty is... there's so many stories you can tell about him and stuff like that. But the one thing that nobody could ever take away from Tommy Docherty is his passion for football. Tommy Docherty, another Gobbles boy, got into Celtic, got in the Scotland team, had a lot of success as a manager, a great character and a great guy to, you know, to meet and to talk to. So, you know, Tommy Docherty was a big thing in my life because he signed me at 17 and he picked me for Scotland and he also signed me again for Man United.
Wow, some memories there.
Yeah, great memories. But the thing was with Doc, you could also have a good laugh with him. But most of the managers back in the day, Andrew, they weren't under as much pressure as the guys nowadays. I mean, two or three bad games and you know, everybody's kind of looking over their shoulder a wee bit at you. So, you know, they got time in, back in the day, really. And hopefully, you know, some of the football after the, you know, the lockdown, maybe the directors and people that run the football clubs will maybe look a little bit more kindly at managers because it's a tough game. You've got a lot of people to consider and you've got a lot of people that you've got to please. So, you know, yeah, it's a great job if you've got it, but it's a tough game to handle.
You've done a little managing yourself. You managed Halifax, didn't you?
Yeah, we had a great time as a manager of Halifax. I really enjoyed it. I need to tell you this tale, Andrew. You'll love this tale. We played Doncaster and I was at Halifax. And I as the manager, I checked Doncaster out quite a few times. And I felt really confident that I had the plan to beat Doncaster. So when we came to the day of the game, Billy Bremner was manager of Doncaster at that time. So I'd seen Billy before the game, had a little chat with him, and we got in the dugout. And as you come out the tunnel at Doncaster, I was on the left-hand side dugout and Billy was on the right-hand side. And the game started and it was quite early on and Doncaster scored. And Billy popped his little face out, his red hair, and he winked at me and smiled at me. And then I thought, you wee bugger type of thing. Anyway, I'm sat there watching the game. Anyway, they scored two and Billy's done it again. So he's come out of the dugout and he's nodded to me and winked to me and laughed. And I thought, Jesus. Anyway, they go three up and Billy's there again and he's looking over at me and laughing his head off. Anyway, I'm sitting there thinking, it's about 5 minutes before the end of the first half. I'm thinking, how am I going to say something in here? How can I change this around? I've got to be careful. I've got to be clever. I've got to get through to them somehow. Anyway, we went in the dressing room. Everybody was in the dressing room. Says, wash your face or get your cup of tea and everybody sit down and listen. So I thought, it's got to be short and sharp, Jim, and that's it. Let's do it. So they're all sat down. I waited for a little bit just to really bring the focus on myself. And I just looked around the room. I said, look, go out, win the second half. And I walked out the door and never said another word. Went in the dugout, did a Jose Mourinho and sat on my own in the dugout. They come out, the team, second half, 3-1. I got out of the dugout, smiled over to Billy. 3-2. Got out again, a wee smile to Billy. 3-each, a big, big grin on my face to wee Billy Bremner. So another 5 minutes later, we're 4-3 ahead. So I thought, Jesus, how good is that? Out the dugout I went and waving to Billy. So I went back in the dugout. We ended up winning 4-3. So went in after the game, and I always remember the coach driver come in. I don't know why he come in anyway. He says, boss, are we going straight home? I says, look. I says, if we can't celebrate winning 4-3 and stay here, we're going to a social club, and you ring your wife and tell her you're going to be late tonight. So I went out of the dressing room. I'd been invited into Billy's room. So I went into Billy's room and I'm talking with Billy. Alan Clark, his ex-Leeds teammate, was in his room, in his office. And so was Arthur Graham, who's a big Celtic nut. Arthur played for Leeds United, played for Aberdeen, and he also played for Manchester United. And we were all having a glass of beer and we were all talking away and all the rest of it. And I'm laughing at Billy every time he looks at me. And then all of a sudden, Alan Clark broke the wee bit of the silence and he says, Jim, for fuck's sake, he says, what did you say to them at halftime? I says, I just told them to win the second half.
And you did.
We did. It was great. I mean, God, we had such a night in Doncaster. I thought, you got to celebrate 3-0 down and come back to 4-3. That was marvellous.
You should have told them you give them a masterclass on tactics.
No, well, of course, I'd great respect for Leeds because I'd started at Leeds. Alan Clark wasn't there, but Billy was at Leeds when I first went to Leeds. And, of course, they had the mammoth games with Battle of Britain, with Celtic, amazing times, really, back in the day. And total respect for each other, Celtic and Leeds. And of course, so did Don Revie and Jock Stein.
Now, you just after mentioning a game there. Do you remember that game, the semi-final?
Not really. Not really.
Well, then I'm going to pick it again. I'm going to name a player that played in it because I know the corner you're standing close to before you go into Celtic Park. And I know a few of the boys that have been in that corner. And anytime I talk to him, this man's name comes up again and again and again. Bobby Murdoch.
Yes. Fabulous player.
Was he as good as everybody says?
Yes, I would say so. I think it took a while for people perhaps outside of the game to realise that. But I think the thing was the players knew it. And, you know, the most important thing really when you're playing football, Andrew, I think, is the respect to your teammates in the dressing room. And, of course, everybody in the Celtic dressing room knew what a player Bobby Murdoch was. So I think he maybe didn't get as much acclaim as what he should have done. But certainly a great Celtic player and a great Scotland player, definitely, yeah. Definitely a world-class player in my eyes.
Yeah, his name certainly gets mentioned every time I speak to John Fallon about any game he played. Bobby Murdoch was the engine. He just holds him in such high regard. Now, Jim, yeah. While I have you on, I want to pick your brain about something that I don't know a lot about, and I'll admit to that. You went to play in America with Chicago in the late 70s, and so many talented players from around the world headed for America. So there was obviously money there in this new game, which they called soccer. Bobby Lennox also went over. I think he went to Houston, and I think there's a Celtic supporters club called after him. Just tell us about that experience and what you found when you arrived, and was it what you expected, though? How different was it to playing anywhere else?
It was certainly different because the one thing, the stipulation back then, Andrew, was you had to have 5 American players in your squad. Every squad in the league, you had to have 5 Americans. Whether you played them or not, that was up to you. But obviously, it was very difficult to get, you know, such a lot of Americans that was up to the standard. But the thing was, most of the players that was going out there were older players finishing off their career. But you could go out there and play for 4 or 5 months and then still come back to England or to Scotland and still get a game till the end of the season. So it wasn't like a year's contract. But the thing that I thoroughly enjoyed about it was I was obviously a big fan of Pelé. And I think it was 5 games into me being there, which I went to Chicago Sting. We played the New York Cosmos, who Pelé was playing for. And it was quite an amazing scene that day and to play against Pelé. Because what they did back then was they would introduce you individually. And, of course, with Pelé being in town, there was a big crowd and obviously a lot of people wanting to see them. And I was dying to play against him and hopefully shake his hand at the end of the match. Well, we were all outside and it was quite cold. It was 3 o'clock kickoff in the afternoon and we all stood about. Anyway, it came to the end and Pelé came out. And when he came out, they introduced him to the crowd. Anyway, he went and he did a lap of honour. And we were all standing there and we were freezing and we were all shouting at him, get back over here, let's get started. We're freezing. And he went all the way around the pitch and the sambos were on and the drums and Pelé was dancing away and we were bloody freezing. We're thinking, Pelé, get back here, let's get started. Anyway, he came back and for his cheek, really, we beat them 2-1.
Good stuff. And did you get to shake his hand?
Yeah, of course. It was great to play in the same field as them. And we did actually play them. I played in the game against them at the Cosmos Stadium in New York. And we beat them there as well. So it wasn't a fluke. We beat them twice. So that was a big thrill, really, to, you know, to be on the winning side against Pelé twice. But the American thing, it was always going to be, I thought back then, a wee bit hit and miss, Andrew, because the important thing is to get football in the schools and in the boys' clubs and get the young people playing it so that there's a future. It's okay paying out the big money for, you know, professionals that are coming to the end of their career and some young professionals that perhaps haven't made it in the UK could go out there and have a chance making the grade in America. And have a better lifestyle, Andrew. That was, you know, the other part of it. But as regards the the money, and the money was obviously good. And for a player coming to the end of his career, that just helped you that bit more.
Yeah, no, it's always something that, just as a kid, I remember seeing, you know, pictures in soccer annuals like Pelé playing in America and all the greats. So it's just something that when I knew you were coming on, I says, you know, I'm going to pick his brain a little about this American
journey. I need to tell you this story. We were playing Fort Lauderdale, and there was a clock there, and as it was in most grounds, and I thought we'd played a lot longer. And I looked up at the clock, and the clock was 5 minutes to go. And there was a wee guy playing for Fort Lauderdale, and he was a real cocky wee thing. He really was. And we were beating him. And he was really annoying some of the boys with what he said. And for whatever reason, I thought it was just about a minute to go. I got the ball, and I took it over to him, and I sat on the ball in front of him. And I just sat there and waited for him to come and get the ball. And as he come and get it, I flicked it and I stood up and I just looked at him. And I thought, that's it, the game's over now. Anyway, the clock was going every 15 minutes. So I'd sat in the ball, took the mickey out of him, took the Michael out of him, and there's still 15 minutes to go.
That's because your legs were getting older. That's why. Before I let you go as well, I don't know if you remember this, but I walked with a former League of Ireland footballer from Balbriggan in North County, Dublin, called Sean Wilson. And when we were doing the gig in Celtic AM in Malone's, I hadn't walked with him for a few years, but he got in contact with me. And he said, ask Jim, and I don't think I did on the day, does he remember coming to Balbriggan as a kid?
Yes, I do.
Boys club or something.
That's right. I was with St. Francis Boys Guild, and we were over there camping. So there was about, I think, possibly maybe 20, 30 the young people from St. Francis Boys Guild. We went out to Ireland and on the boat, and we were camping there for about a week. It might have even been longer, Andrew, but yeah, that was right. There was a bridge on the way home for when you used to go to go into the town. And of course, young boys at 13 and 14, you think you're the bee's knees, don't you? And we would try and stay in town as long as we could. But the only problem was to get to the camp, we had to run under this bridge. And this bridge was known as the Banshee. So it was a big taboo back in the day. And what we used to do is we would get to the front of the bridge, and it was probably about 30, 40 yards through this tunnel kind of thing. And we used to get ready and wind ourselves up, and the Banshee's coming, the Banshee this, the Banshee that. And then we used to tear through this tunnel as quick as we could go, because we're obviously a wee bit scared of it. But yeah, we did. It was great. We thoroughly enjoyed Balbriggan, yeah.
And that went on for many years after you were there, because I know one of the lads that travels with us, Freddie, is steeped in Celtic tradition. He's from Glasgow, and he came on one of them little trips, and he ended up meeting a girl, and years later they got married, and he settled. He still lives in Ireland. He still travels over to the games with us. So it was obviously, there must have been a connection somehow, you know, maybe through a priest or through a teacher or... Because it started somewhere and it went on for many years, and I believe there were some great games of football.
Yeah, it was amazing. People used to say about Gobbles and Gobbles this and the Gobbles that. But the Gobbles was fantastic because I went to, you know, I went to my school, which was St. Francis Boys Guild, but the boys' club, St. Francis Boys Guild, was open every night in the week. It was open at the weekends. There was teams, there was table tennis, there was snooker, there was boxing. You know, there were some great people that run St. Francis Boys Guild and also St. Luke's Boys Club, where I went to when I got a bit older, when I was about 13, 14. And there was guys there that were devoted to keeping these places open at night so that, you know, people like myself and other kids in the Gobbles, you know, it would keep us occupied, and we wouldn't get into any trouble anywhere. Yeah, big shout out for the Gorbals just regards looking after the community. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's brilliant. I think we could do with some of them places now, Jim.
Absolutely. It's you know, it was a great thing, and I remember the guys' names. There was a guy called Joe McCabe at St. Francis Boys Guild. There was Billy Wallace and Tam Daly at St. Luke's Boys Guild. You just remember them because you knew that they put in time for you, Andrew. And they were lovely, lovely men. They were always there for the kids.
Brilliant. Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you.
I've decided after a long, long time I'm going to write a book.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so my book will be it'll be getting hopefully published either the end of this year or maybe in the beginning of the new year. But I've thought about it for a lot of years, Andrew, and I just didn't want to do anything that was going to be sensationalism. I want to talk about football. I want to talk about things that maybe the spectators or the fans, you know, have never heard about. And because football is enriched everybody's life. You can, doesn't matter who you talk to, whether you're a player, whether you're a director, an administrator, whether you're the fans. I think my old manager at Sheffield Wednesday, he gave out a saying about football and how good football had done down through the years. He said it was about creation, that football, you know, was even better than the creation of the world type of thing, which is quite amazing. People love football, Andrew, and so many people have taken part in football.
But Jim, like, we've only touched on your story today, and even just the conversation, I can't wait for the book, because I know the Gorbals well, the teams you played for, the winning, the losing, scoring that goal, and then your childhood and visiting Balbriggan, which is only up the road from me. So, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people be looking forward to this book, and maybe a few might be weary.
No, I don't think so. No, it's something, like I said, I have such a passion for football, and it's about football, and it's about the wonderful sport that it is.
Well, Jim, the best of luck, and we look forward to reading and going to the book launch. I'm sure there'll be plenty of free champagne.
Hope so. Looking forward to it.
Just before you go, I was mentioned there before we were chatting about the book, the people that's around that little where you stand outside the Pool's office, the knowledge of Celtic is unbelievable and of life. And you have the King of Donegal, Charlie McGinley, there as well.
Yes, Charlie's a great guy. John McLaughlin, they're all around there. John Fallon, Charlie Gallagher. Anybody wants to come and say hello, we're always round about the Pool's office, and we'd be delighted to say hello to you.
And also there's Tommy Stevenson, who seems to be getting younger by the season.
Yeah, of course, Tommy and his boy and his grandson. So they're keeping up the tradition.
It truly is a brilliant club to follow. And the little pockets that we meet outside the ground and we have a little chat and, you know, a little nod of the head some days. And it was a pleasure. I think it was Charlie that introduced me to you. And it's always been a pleasure to speak to you and Debbie. And maybe someday I'll come and stay in the bed and breakfast.
Yes. Anybody else wants to come, give us a shout. Yeah. Langside Bed and Breakfast. It's in Fenwick, Fenwick. It's in Ayrshire. And we'd be delighted to see any Celtic fans. It's on the way to Celtic Park from Stranraer.
Tell Debbie to get the rashers out of the fridge. I'm on my way.
Yeah, that'll be great, Andrew. Look forward to seeing you.
Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Andrew. Take care, everybody. Stay safe.
Thanks to Jim for taking time out to chat to me today. From the Gorbals in Glasgow to Wembley, from Chicago to New York, Tommy Docherty, Billy Bremner, Laurie McMenamin, Paddy Crown, all big names in football. I can't wait to read his book when it's finished. Thanks once again to everyone who has visited our website, CelticFanzine.com. We are currently working on issue 110 of the fanzine, which will be the first of the new season. And I would like to thank everyone who has signed up for subscriptions. Thanks also to everyone who bought one of our t-shirts. The new Rude Boys one has certainly caught the imagination. A couple of old skins and Rudies out there are obviously supporting Celtic. You can check out all our t-shirts and merchandise at our online shop at celticfanzine.com/shop/. And we have new designs going up each week. Your support means we can continue to create free content and free live events as we move closer to returning to a new kind of normality. The podcast is available on all platforms, Apple, Acast, Spotify, or whatever platform you prefer. So please subscribe and follow us so you never miss an episode of the Celtic Soul podcast. And don't forget to check out our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can also listen to all the podcasts on our website. Thanks again to our sponsor, Brian Hogan Celtic Supporters Club down in Tipperary. And thanks for giving Shane again a copy of the fanzine. I love the picture of him with the mag. Quality, boys. I owe you a point or two, and I finally get down after lockdown. Special thanks, as always, to our producer, Ronan McQuillan, and to you, the listeners. Thanks for all the comments. Keep them coming in, and don't forget to let us know your story or who you would like us to have on the podcast. Enjoy the weekend. The restaurants and the bars are back open, and I'll be out myself celebrating with my Rangers supporting mate for his 50th birthday.
What the fuck?
Calm down. It's my Queen's Park Rangers supporting me, Baz. The face of Ronan, the producer, when I said that. Amazing what one word can do for people. We will be back on Tuesday with episode 12, when my guest will be Keith Galloway, an Australian Rugby League internationalist who played at the highest level in Australia and also with the Leeds Rhinos. And when at the Rhinos, it gave him a chance to come up to Glasgow to watch the team he supported as a boy, Celtic, after his dad brought him up the Celtic way after emigrating from Scotland. Keep the faith, and remember, we still have to keep safe as we wait for the fixtures, which should be out soon if Hearts and Co. don't win their civil action against the SPFL, which, to be honest, we don't need. We need to get the fixtures out, and we need to get back watching Celtic as planned on August the 4th, even if it is on the TV, because we are going to do 10 in a row.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.